Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my two-year-old toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. It's Tony and I here today, and today we're going to talk about a huge topic. You probably heard about it a lot in the media, on reading blogs, but it's called leaky gut and the microbiome, and we'll get into what these are, but we really want to focus on gut health when we have any issues with our health, because digestion and absorption is the foundation for our whole body. So how we break down our food and then absorb the nutrients, so digestion and absorption, gives us all the vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, etc., that we need to make hormones, to balance hormones, and to feel our best. The way I like to describe it is, if you're growing a garden, you want to make sure you're giving the plants the right nutrients, or else the leaves are going to wilt. The plant is going to die, so you really want to give it everything it needs. So not only do you want to provide your body with healthy food, so we talked about that previously in the nutrition episode, but you also want to make sure you're actually getting everything you need from that food. When people have leaky gut, it doesn't always just show up as digestive symptoms. So we think about, you know, diarrhea, constipation, gas, bloating, heartburn. But if you have leaky gut, you're actually getting inflammation in the rest of your body. So it can show up as headaches, joint pain, skin rashes. It can show up as a weakened immune system. So you're getting sick a lot, or you're suffering from allergies or sinus issues. So it impacts the whole body. Tony, did I miss anything in terms of the effects of leaky gut? I guess I didn't even talk about the autoimmune link to it, but anything you want to share there?
Oh, for sure. And even, you know, thinking about myself and some of the digestive symptoms that I had growing up with kind of stomach pains, that then developed into migraines. And I find with myself and with the patients that I see in my office, when there's migraines, definitely looking at the gut health as well, and, you know, leaky gut, food sensitivities, what's happening with the microbiome, those can all be really important too.
For sure, because if we have a leaky gut, we'll talk about what that is. You can actually have a leaky blood-brain barrier. So things are getting into the brain that aren't supposed to be and causing inflammation there, which can affect mood, can cause migraines and headaches, can accelerate dementia and aging. So it can impact the brain as well as the gut. We realize there's that huge link between the brain and the gut. But yeah, let's talk about what actually is leaky gut so people know what we're referring to.
For sure. And you know what? It's funny because I even sometimes really hesitate in talking about leaky gut, because leaky gut for me doesn't really sound very scientific. So I will often say, you know, leaky gut, but really it is increased intestinal permeability. So that just means that really kind of the cells in along your digestive tract lining are coming apart. They're not properly supported.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, that's a nice term to use, increased intestinal permeability. I can't even say it.
I know it's so scientific that we can barely say it.
Thanks, Dr. Tony. Yeah, I like to explain to people that our gut is basically like a big tube from our mouth to our anus. Of course, it takes on different properties from the esophagus, and then it becomes larger and becomes the stomach, and then it gets into the small intestines, and then out through the anus. Yes, I did say anus. But we're talking about, Tony's talking about the cells becoming leaky. So if you were to take a cross section of the small intestines, so you have a layer of cells that's basically separating the outside world, which is everything going into the digestive tract, to the inside world, which is everything that's absorbed through the gut lining that eventually gets into the bloodstream. And when you are exposed to certain toxins, bad bacteria, If you have food sensitivities and you're eating those foods, if you take an antibiotics, for some people, gluten can do this too. The junctions or the actual parts that connect that layer of cells together become loose. They're no longer tight and closely together. They're supposed to be tight and close together. So only the things that we need get into the bloodstream, which is lining the digestive tract inside your body. But if they're looser, then things like food particles that aren't supposed to get into the bloodstream pass through that cell layer, toxins, bad bacteria, they get into the bloodstream. And then the immune system sees these as a threat, like a virus or a bacteria. And your body mounts a response even to these food particles that, you know, typically other people might not react to. You build antibodies, and that basically is inflammation in the body. These antibodies and pieces of food particles or whatever the trigger was travels around the bloodstream and can deposit in the brain, going through the blood-brain barrier and causing headaches, migraines, etc. They can deposit in the joints and cause joint pain, in the skin and cause skin rashes like eczema, can worsen psoriasis, contribute to hives, and there can be another reaction for that as well. But it can be widespread. So it might not only affect your digestive system, it can affect other areas of the body. And some people actually might not have any digestive symptoms, but they're getting these other problems. Or they might have had, like Tony, you said, you had digestive or stomach pains, and then they translated down the road into migraine, probably because the leaky gut was not identified and addressed before you became a naturopath.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, that's something to really think about, not only for ourselves, but also for our kids too. When we're talking about food sensitivities and leaky gut, even translating into leaky brain, not only can that lead to, you know, headaches, that can lead to headaches, fatigue. It can also impact behavior. And there's definitely some studies that suggest that that kind of leaky gut and leaky blood-brain barrier can contribute to behavioral issues with kids as well.
For sure. Yeah, I know myself. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a behavioral issue, but if I have gluten, I definitely get brain fog and fatigue, so I can't think clearly. So these foods can impact learning in the classroom and can translate into behavioral changes too in children as well. Like Tony, you mentioned the issues with some symptoms you had with leaky gut, but I have some issues in terms of when I had eggs. So I used to eat them a lot. If you listened to a previous podcast, you would have heard that, but and I was fine for a while, but eventually I started to get skin rashes, and then other foods that I tended to react to is gluten, as I mentioned. So it not only caused brain fog, but I'd have more aches and pains the next few days after in my body. I'd feel more sore, more muscle pain, inflammation, and definitely a lot of bloating too. And just, I would totally crash for a few days. It's almost like a gluten flu, if you will. It took a few days for me to recover. And then one other food that I avoid, I can sometimes get away with some goat's dairy, but cow's dairy especially, I can get some acne, I can get more aches and pains in my joints too. So these are different ways that the leaky gut can show up.
Yeah, and it's interesting because different points in being perimenopausal mamas and with our hormone balance, can impact how we experience any kind of food sensitivities. I definitely growing up and kind of along my journey, figuring out what was impacting migraines and finding, really looking at food sensitivities and the foods that really work for me and the foods that don't work for me. I found that absolutely for me, dairy, wheat, yeast would really impact me. And once I became pregnant and having those hormonal changes and immune system changes, I was able to eat a lot more wheat and dairy and yeast than I would be able to tolerate. And now that I'm not breastfeeding anymore, I'm really finding that the further I get away from being pregnant, the more and more I can't tolerate those foods again. So, mm-hmm. So boo.
Well, that's a really good point, Tony, because our immune system definitely changes while we're pregnant and while we're breastfeeding. So we may be able to tolerate foods that we reacted to otherwise. And this could be protective because studies are suggesting that if we're eating foods, especially while we're breastfeeding, that are more of the top allergenic type foods, of course, if we can tolerate them and we're not going into anaphylaxis, this can infer our children to be less likely to have allergies to those foods, because if they're exposed to it while we're breastfeeding, it helps their body and their immune system tolerate it more effectively. So it may be a protective mechanism where we should eat a little bit of everything to help our children's immune system develop properly and prevent the food allergies that are becoming so prevalent this day and age.
For sure. The recommendations are really to not avoid things like peanuts and other nuts and those high allergenic potential foods when you're pregnant. And that shows that there's, a lower risk of having kids to develop those allergies down the road too.
For sure. And a big piece of, the immune system too is the microbiome, which we haven't talked about yet, but lining that cell layer in our intestines, we are supposed to have a really good number of good bacteria. We actually have in our body 10 times more microbial cells, so small organism cells, than we do our actual human body cells. So it's estimated that there's about 100 trillion microbes, or small organisms, in our body, which just blows my mind. They only add up to about 2 to 6 pounds of weight because they're really small and light, but they govern our immune system. And most of our immune system, 70% of our immune system, is found in our gut lining in these different patches of immune activity. And if we don't have the right bacteria in our gut, we don't have that extra layer of protection, that barrier. So viruses and bacteria can get into our system more easily and we can get sick and succumb to that.
Yeah, it's almost a little bit creepy when you think about the fact that there's more bacteria and other stuff in us than actually us.
I know, right?
And we really depend on it. I mean, we've evolved to really need this bacteria. A big part of what our gut microbes can do, especially the beneficial bacteria, is to produce short chain fatty acids. One of those short chain fatty acids is called butyrate, and it's really important for maintaining a proper blood brain barrier for us, as well as those microbes also really help with absorption of our nutrients and even production of some of our vitamins, like vitamin B12.
Definitely. And being like a mom and just thinking back to how were you birthed? How were you fed? Because we were originally exposed to the first bacteria. We're supposed to ideally go through the vaginal canal. I know that's not possible for everybody, but then we're exposed to the bacteria in our mom's vaginal tract. And that goes into our eyes, our nose, and our mouth. And that inoculates our intestines. And then even looking at where you were born, if it was in a hospital versus at home, at the hospital, you might be exposed to, the non-typical bacteria that you should be exposed to on a regular basis. And that may affect the colonization or the growth of the good bacteria. And then with breastfeeding, we get basically prebiotics, so foods for the good bacteria in our gut from the breast milk. So they are adding that to formula now. So there's definitely, formulas come a long way. But I was a C-section birth because I have a twin sister. And I also was formula fed because that was in vogue at the time. It was deemed to be, more healthy. It was more convenient. And then my mom having two of us, it probably would have been really challenging to breastfeed the both of us at the same time. But all of these milestones are the stepping stones to building a good gut bacteria. So if you were C-section baby, if you were formula fed, it's not all over, but it's just good to recognize that, okay, you may need to take some more probiotics or focus on prebiotic foods. But you know, you want to be aware of that and then take steps to help kind of correct for that. And they're even talking about vaginal seeding, which we could get into a whole other topic, but basically taking a swab and wiping the bacteria in the mother's vaginal tract onto the baby if it was a C-section baby. Still in the earlier phases of studies, you know, makes intuitive sense, but we'll see what comes out from the research. But that's a way to get exposed to the good bacteria.
For sure. And there's even, you know, specific probiotics that have been researched for use in babies to really help to prevent allergies, eczema, that kind of thing. So again, that microbiome is really important that way. And, you know, like you were kind of pointing to, Lisa, it's not that, if you were born by C-section and were formula fed, that you're definitely in trouble. It just can make you more susceptible. And there are a few other things that can make you more susceptible to leaky gut and digestive issues. And that's even with the medications that you had either, you know, while you were growing up as a kid or even as an adult too, you know, things like how many antibiotic rounds did you take as a kid and as an adult, use of painkillers like NSAIDs or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, other steroids, also acid inhibiting medications like proton pump inhibitors. You know, these are very commonly prescribed to adults, but they're even starting to be commonly prescribed to babies who have reflux too. Those medications will absolutely impact the microbiome and how well the digestive system works.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So if you have a baby or know of someone that has a baby on a PPI, it's like, okay, let's talk to them about looking at some good probiotics to help, you know, correct that, and then working with a naturopath to get to the root cause of the reflux, possibly seeing an osteopath or craniosacral therapist. You know, there may be some structural issues from birth or from, you know, gestation where things are just not in alignment in the body, and that could be contributing to the reflux as well.
Yeah, and another big medication that a lot of people are surprised to hear that there's a link between it and digestive issues is the birth control pill. Mm-hmm. As wonderful as the birth control pill has been for women in general in terms of providing some reproductive freedom, there's definitely some impacts on our health from it. And there are studies linking the birth control pill to an increase in leaky gut. And that's really important to be aware of. I've definitely had patients where they've come to me with digestive issues. We've worked on it. And they've been on the pill and nothing necessarily changes until they come off the pill and they notice that they get a lot of relief from the constant kind of bloating, gas, and discomfort that they had been experiencing.
For sure. Yeah, and a lot of, you know, perimenopausal mamas after having a kid, they might not want to get pregnant right away or again. So they might go on the birth control pill, right? And then they might start to get some of these different signs and symptoms of a leaky gut down the road. So it's looking at, okay, what can be done instead of the birth control pill, possibly a non-hormonal IUD, for example, but it's talking to your healthcare provider about alternates if you're all of a sudden starting to get migraines or digestive issues or skin rashes and you can't really figure out why.
That's really important. Another piece of how the birth control can impact us is, I mean, it can really increase the risk of depression in women and different mood disorders. And it really makes me think about the link between our gut and our brain. You know, there's definitely a gut-brain axis. There's more and more research being done on this. And with the birth control pill impacting our microbiome, you know, what we often don't necessarily think about is how our neurotransmitters that are kind of our brain chemicals that can impact our mood are actually produced in large, large amounts in our gut. I believe about 80 to 90% of our serotonin, our happy hormone, is actually produced in the digestive tract. A lot of us just think of it as being, you know, just in the brain, but our digestive tract is really important for that really important mood chemical.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really good point. Our second brain is in our gut, and our brain talks to our gut, and our gut talks to our brain. And if mood's off, we definitely want to start with digestion. And a new theory on what is causing depression is actually inflammation. And most of the inflammation, or all of inflammation, starts in the gut too. So you want to reduce the sources of inflammation. And then with low mood, looking at brain hormone or neurotransmitter support, but also natural anti-inflammatories, things like fish oil, curcumin. More of these natural anti-inflammatories are being studied for depression too.
For sure. And definitely that idea of kind of our gut and our brain talking to each other. That's where, you know, I really think about the vagus nerve is a really important kind of nervous system highway that goes in between the digestive tract. So when we're talking about, stressors on the digestive tract, even, you know, our emotional and psychological stress will absolutely impact our, can impact our digestive function too. You know, we think about nervous stomach or, you know, having butterflies or that kind of thing. You know, they have seen that stress will impact how well the vagus nerve functions. And so that is a big link between stress and our digestive function.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, Tony, because yeah, stress and the vagus nerve, if it's not functioning properly, will impact the motility and the movement of food through our digestive system. And then also if we're in a stressed out state, we're in that state of the nervous system where our body's running away from that bear. Digestion is not a priority. So we're not secreting stomach acid and enzymes. The blood flow is not going to the digestive system. So if you're trying to eat in a state like that, and that could be just even rushing to eat your lunch because you're doing a presentation at work after, you're not going to break your food down properly, so you're not going to digest it, and then you're not going to have the right building blocks to absorb, to fuel and build our hormones and balance our hormones as well.
Yeah, and I definitely found that this was a really key piece for me. Not only that idea of, you know, having the food sensitivities and having foods that didn't really work for me, I found that I really wasn't producing the kind of stomach acid that was really needed to support my digestion, which then contributed to more bloating and gas and those kind of things. So that idea of having not enough stomach acid or hypocholorrhidrhea is really key for, again, leaky gut and our digestive tract working properly.
I love that you threw hypochloridia in there. You have the great scientific terms, Tony. It's awesome.
I love them.
I can say it this time. So. Yay me. But yeah, that's a really good point. I love having, especially if I, you know, I try to eat in a relaxed state, take a few deep breaths. You know, if I'm feeling rushed or I only have a short amount of time to eat, which I try to avoid in the first place, but I take a little bit of apple cider vinegar. I can have it straight, or some people like it in a little bit of water, but at least that gets the digestive juices flowing. So that may help. Some people may benefit from taking, you know, a digestive enzyme with a little bit of HCL, which is the stomach acid in there, to support them while they're working on getting into that parasympathetic or that rest and digest phase of the nervous system. But ideally, you know, you're eating in a relaxed state, you're taking your time, you're not rushing, and you're not having too much fluid with your food, which we talked about in the nutrition episode, because that can dilute your stomach acid and your enzymes as well.
Absolutely. I usually will be recommending apple cider vinegar to my patients. And I mean, I find that I'm not a big fan of vinegar taste. So sometimes I'll have apple cider vinegar or I'll have bitter herbs instead. Mm-hmm. You know, herbs like gentian have a certain quality to it that will have that stimulation for our digestive juices to get flowing as well.
For sure. Yeah. No, that's another good way to do it. Yeah. I really like the taste of bitter. It took me a while. I used to have a sweet tooth, but I definitely love even bitter foods like arugula, for example. Adding some of that to your salad can also impact and help digestion as well.
Yeah. And it definitely can take some time to get used to the taste of the bitter herbs and to actually start to like them over the years. I know that my taste buds have definitely changed from more of that craving of sweet and enjoying that sweet to appreciating more of the bitters too.
For sure. Yeah. If we look at even sugar, so if we're talking about, you know, moving more towards bitter foods, but if you're eating a lot of sugar and fructose, this is going to disrupt the junctions between the cells in the intestine, leading to leaky gut. And then the sugar feeds the bad organisms in your system. So even things like candida and yeast too. And those are going to crowd out the good bacteria that you need for your digestion to work, your immune system to work, for there to be less inflammation in the body. So definitely getting the sugar down and the processed foods, because it contains so many ingredients our body, I believe, doesn't even know how to process, can really help to allow the gut to heal.
Absolutely. Sugar is a big one. And, you know, gluten can be a big one for a lot of people. You know, definitely people with celiac disease, especially, you know, diagnosed celiac disease, will absolutely have a problem with gluten, and it will definitely cause damage to the digestive tract. But they're also finding that there are people with a non-celiac gluten sensitivity, and that can increase levels of a compound called zonulin in the body, which is linked with and associated with leaky gut.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a big food trigger for a lot of people, that is gluten and gliadin, and a lot of people aren't aware.
Absolutely. And it can be tough because, you know, if you even have a blood test for celiac disease and are negative, then, you know, you may think, okay, I'm fine with gluten, but that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm. And I'm finding a lot of people don't realize, but before they get the celiac blood test, they need to be eating gluten for at least 2 weeks before the test fairly regularly. So some people go and get it done with their doctor after they've been avoiding gluten for a while, and it will come up negative. You need to expose yourself to the gluten to either test positive or negative to it. It's like a challenge to your system.
Absolutely.
And I know, the term leaky gut, it sounds kind of out there. So we'll use the increased intestinal permeability. But there are actually a lot of major doctors and those with PhDs talking about it now in the scientific field. And there is the director for the Center of Celiac Research and Treatment with the Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. His name is Dr. Alessio Fasano. He's doing a lot of studies on leaky gut. And he said that there's science is continuing to find new ways that the gut can influence everything from heart health to keeping our brains young. But he also notes there's much we know about leaky gut, but there's still so much that is unknown. So it's just a field that's starting to be studied. And we definitely need to delve into more research, but there are more studies with, as Tony mentioned, zonulin increasing with gluten exposure, and that makes those tight junctions become weak. Or basically punches holes in the intestinal tract. And there's even showing there's a marker called LPS, so lipopolysaccharide binding protein. So this is a marker for leaky gut that you can get tested for in the blood. But that's been showing to be increased in those with autoimmune conditions and inflammatory conditions. And one cause of actual leaky gut is a couple conflicts. So as we're going through a perimenopause, we can start to snap more at our partners, and you know, our moods can become off, and we can become short with our partner. But there was a study in the Journal of Psychoneuroendocrinology, so that's basically linking what's going on in our brain to our nervous system and our hormonal system. But this was published in December 2018, where they looked at 43 healthy married couples, and they had them discuss something that would bring up a conflict, like a money problem, for example, where they were in disagreement about. And then those individuals in those couples had some blood samples taken, and their blood showed high levels of that LPS, or lipopolysaccharide binding protein, which is that marker for leaky gut. So just showing stress will increase those markers that can contribute to leaky gut. So really important to get into that parasympathetic nervous system through meditation, good sleep, yoga, and in perimenopause, sleep can definitely be a challenge too. And that's one of the major times when we're in the parasympathetic nervous system. So, you know, we've talked about sleep in another episode, and we'll continue to talk about that more. But sleep and stress will definitely impact how our gut is working.
And it's important to really kind of see, like, I was blown away when I read about that study. And it's important to note that, you know, that that marker for leaky gut, the LPS binding protein, was higher in the couples who argued versus the couples who were more calm about managing that conflict. So it really does point towards the fact that, you know, how we are able to manage our relationships and you know, talk things out, and if we get really worked up versus can stay really calm, will have an impact on our physical health.
Definitely. Yeah. What's going on in our brain and with our emotions is something we really need to focus on, because it does change our biology.
And I really see, this is a really new research study. There's a lot of research being done on, again, this gut-brain connection, on how our emotions impact our nervous system, impacts our digestive system. So we're going to be seeing, I think, a lot more links and just more evidence to this idea of how stress can impact our physical health and how different body systems are connected. We can't separate our digestive tract and our gut from the rest of our body. It's not something that we can close the door on. If there's irritation and inflammation there, it will travel other places in the body. And especially if you are susceptible to different health concerns in other places in the body, whether it's family history or injury or that kind of thing, that's where that irritation and inflammation could potentially travel there and cause more issues.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I definitely even see this when people have developed infections in the digestive tract, and one of those infections is a type of bacterial overgrowth called SIBO. It stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. That's can also be a cause of irritation in the digestive tract, leaky gut, digestive symptoms. And when I have had patients who are positive with SIBO, they're often sometimes they are experience a lot of digestive issues, and they will often experience other issues as well, brain fog, and even pain in areas of their body too. So again, that inflammation impacting other areas of the body. And once we can kind of clear up that bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine, then there's less brain fog, there's less pain in other areas of their body.
SIBO is becoming big in the media as well. So that small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and looking at, yeah, so not only may people have reflux symptoms, but they could have symptoms in other areas of the body. And there is actually testing that can be done. So it is a breath test that you do. So you mentioned getting some testing done, Tony. So it's a very simple test to do. It's done over, like, you take several collections over several hours, but there are ways to look and see, do you have markers for leaky gut, or what's happening with your gut bacteria. So maybe we can use this time to talk a little bit about testing, Tony. What tests do you like to use in your practice?
For sure. Well, I mean, there's definitely a few different tests and that are available, which is really great. There's some really specialized labs in Canada and the States that really go above and beyond what you can get tested for in the conventional system. So I will definitely think about, ruling in or ruling out SIBO with doing a breath test. There's other comprehensive stool tests through a few different labs. GI Map is one of them that looks at, the good bacteria that's there in your digestive tract, the not so good bacteria, and even pathogenic bacteria, as well as looking at markers to see how well you're digesting your protein, your fats, your carbohydrates, levels of inflammation in the body. Those can be really useful for seeing exactly what's going on with your digestive health.
Mm-hmm. I love those comprehensive digestive stool analysis. And they even take whatever bad bacteria you have in your stool sample, which would represent what's in your gut, and test them against different natural, what we call antimicrobials, so herbs that can kill off the bad organisms, to see what will work in terms of killing off the bad to help restore the numbers of your good bacteria. We typically hear, you know, lactobacillus and bifidobacterium. There's so many different strains and type of bacteria, and that could be a whole other topic, but mm-hmm. This test looks at levels of good and bad organisms and then ways to help kill them off.
Absolutely. And it'll even, you know, look at some prescription medications as well, to kind of, again, give people a lot of options to really make sure that things are properly corrected in the body too.
For sure.
And I've even found with patients who have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth that sometimes when they, again, take probiotics right away without really correcting things, they actually feel worse because introducing more of that good bacteria isn't necessarily correcting the situation.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. It should be individualized in each case, each person looked at separately, and then appropriate testing done too. So probiotics aren't always the answer. It has to be given the right dose at the right time.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, all looking at all of these things can be pretty confusing. So it can be really nice to have someone walk you through what exactly makes sense for you and your case and your history. So again, that's where, you know, as naturopathic doctors, we can definitely help. And that's what we do with our patients day in and day out.
For sure. I like to think of it like we're detectives. And then even looking at other blood tests that are typically done, like your iron levels, so your ferritin stores, a marker of inflammation called high sensitivity C-reactive protein. So if your iron's chronically low and you're taking in foods that are rich in iron or a supplement that's high in iron, that's a good quality, this can be a sign you have leaky gut. You might have celiac disease. You might have a gluten sensitivity that might not be celiac disease. And if your inflammatory marker, that high sensitivity C-reactive protein, is high, it's good to follow up with a test for celiac or food sensitivities or leaky gut, because there's definitely something going on that's adding to inflammation in your body. So even just starting with a general blood test with iron levels, inflammatory marker levels, can help point you in the right direction and lead to other testing too.
Absolutely. And that inflammation can also come from an imbalance in your microbiome of bacteria or other organisms like yeast that really don't belong there in the number and the amounts that they're there. So all of those things are really important to look at to really help to resolve things, especially if you're finding that you can't change it on your own. There are some things that can help digestive function. I'll often recommend more fermented foods or bone broth can also be really a good source of nutrients to help to support your digestive tract. We already mentioned, you know, stimulating your digestive juices with apple cider vinegar, bitter herbs, that kind of thing. Also, Lisa, you mentioned eating slowly, you know, when you're calm, to really get that parasympathetic nervous system response kicked in so that you can properly digest your foods. But if those things aren't necessarily helping to change any digestive symptoms you're having, then you really do need to do some digging into what's going on underneath.
Mm-hmm. And one big issue too that can contribute to leaky gut on the lines of antibiotics is antibacterial products. So things with triclosan, so hand sanitizers, even toothpaste may contain triclosan. You know, I wonder about commercial mouthwashes, how that's affecting your mouth flora, which can then maybe affect your gut flora. So these can kill off the good bacteria. The aim is to kill off the bad, but they can also kill off the good bacteria too. So avoiding those antibacterial products as much as possible. Of course, you want to wash your hands thoroughly, but it doesn't have to be an antibacterial soap. And then looking at, as Tony mentioned, the fermented foods are really good. But so exposing yourself to the good bacteria, and even getting into the soil and gardening and getting your hands in the dirt, and really good for kids and babies to do as well. Maybe not newborns, but letting them get exposed to those organisms, because we are supposed to be challenged with different bacteria in our system, and that's how we get them into our body as well.
Yeah, I mean, there is that hygiene hypothesis of looking at, why are we having so many digestive issues? Why are we having so many allergies? Why is there so much autoimmune disease happening? And it is that question of, are we keeping ourselves too clean? I even think about like chlorine in water. And, you know, is that, is there a really good case for actually filtering and taking out some of that chlorine in the water that you're drinking in order to really help to promote a good balance of bacteria in your digestive tract so that our insides aren't too clean.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Definitely. I know we're starting to question just things that have been status quo. It's like, is this really helping us? Is this really necessary? You know, we once thought that the earth was flat and then we discovered it wasn't. So I like to use that analogy. We don't know everything. And if someone says they do, well, I think they have an issue and a confidence issue, because things are constantly changing. We're constantly learning more and more. So being open to start to see things from a different perspective, I think, is really key.
And, you know, like we said before, you know, there's so much research being done. We're just going to learn more and more about how our digestive systems are connected to our hormone balance and our brain health and all of those things, our immune health. And, you know, when we know more, we can do better. And that's where, you know, it's just a matter of going with, you know, what we know now, doing our best, and you know, doing your best with supporting your health with what you know.
For sure. And I'll go through a few things that I do on a regular basis to help with my gut health. And then maybe Tony, you'll want to share some, you know, tips that you incorporate and other people can do as well. But I really avoid products with triclosan and any specific antibacterial products. I do get in the garden and play with my son, Stuart. I like to add some sauerkraut. You don't even need that much, but 1 to 2 tablespoons to my salad on a fairly regular basis. I take probiotics regularly and give it to my son Stuart in a powdered form. And then I love, especially this time of year, making bone broths in my Instant Pot. So you get from the bones and the cartilage, you know, just throw everything in there with a bit of apple cider vinegar, filtered water. You could add in a bit of celery root or onions or carrots, a bay leaf, some peppercorns if you want. But at the very basic, just add in some bones, cartilage, water, a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar. I cook it in the Instant Pot for 2 hours, but that gets out it's called NAG, N-acetylglucosamine. So this is a structural component that helps our digestive system heal. So those would be my top leaky gut remedies that I incorporate on a regular basis. And then, you know, if you're getting food sensitivity testing or stool analysis, you can go on more of a specific path for treatment and avoidance. And I typically avoid gluten, dairy, refined sugars, and eggs. I can get away with a couple times a week now without having a reaction, but I feel better when I avoid those other foods to not aggravate the gut. Because every time you eat a food you're sensitive to, you're basically scratching away at the gut lining. Eventually, you know, the scab will break and start to bleed. So you can start to know how much you can handle a food without it eliciting a reaction. But usually you avoid that food sensitivity once you find it out for a good several months while you do a lot of these gut healing supports.
For sure. I agree with all of those, Lisa. And another one of my favorite kind of gut healing nutrients is an amino acid called L-glutamine. It's something that I've taken on a regular basis in the past, and even, you know, keep on hand for any kind of digestive issues that come up or any flare-ups that come up. Again, I think of it like food for the cells of your digestive tract. So it's a great piece that could be a part of, you know, supporting the digestive system for everyone.
I love that. Yeah, Tony, that's a really easy one people can incorporate, right? Because you can get it in a powder form. You could add it to your smoothies or to your coconut chia pudding. It doesn't taste like anything. So I think that's a really good one for your gut and your immune system health.
Yeah, sometimes a little easier to take than the bitter herbs.
Right. That's right. And one herb we didn't mention is slippery elm. So you can actually get that as a powder and add that to foods. And you can see your naturopath about how to incorporate that in children as well, if they're suffering from reflux or other digestive problems, even constipation. But always consult your healthcare practitioner to make sure what you're taking is safe, because some of these can interfere with medication absorption, or different herbs may affect how medications are working or interfere with conditions that people have.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think this is such an important thing for everyone to remember, is that, you know, and the reason why we're talking about it today, our guts are really the foundation for our health, especially when it comes to absorbing our nutrients, having the building blocks for our hormones, and creating less stress in our bodies that can impact our hormone balance as well.
Okay, Tony, it's now time for the super mom moment of the week. Can you share yours?
Yeah, I'd love to, Lisa. You know, with Valentine's Day just past us, something that was really kind of top of my mind was really thinking that the best thing that I've probably done as a mom is actually make sure I had the right dad for my daughter. So, you know, I'm just really thankful that I was smart enough or open enough or lucky enough to have a good partner for my daughter Frankie. And so that I feel like that was the best thing that I've done as a mom, not only this week, but in the past year and a half.
That's amazing, Tonia. That's definitely one of the most important things, I guess, when we're thinking about having kids, is picking the right partner who's going to be able to work with you and work together. So great job.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, he's a fantastic dad, and I like to think that we're a great team.
Nice. I still have to meet him, if you could believe that, right?
Yeah, right.
We'll work on that.
We'll definitely work on that. And Lisa, how about you? Do you have a mom mess up that you could share with us?
I do. And it actually messed up my day today. So I was supposed to have patients, but I had to reschedule them because I woke up this morning with a sty. So it's basically a swollen eyelid. It's painful red. It is caused by an infection or a blocked duct. And I kind of think I know where I got it from. Maybe I'm passing the blame to Stuart, but we were at the cottage and I brought my blackout eye mask, and it was on the nightstand, and he was playing in the room and put it on, and he has a runny nose that was just dripping. And I probably got some of that on the eye mask. I didn't really think anything of it. I just said, can you please stop playing with that? You have a runny nose. And I put it back on the nightstand, and then I used it for the last two nights. So I think that's what did it. So mom mess up. So really pay attention to potential for contamination from viruses or bacteria from your kids.
Oh, I could totally see myself doing that too with my eye mask, and some, you know, as much as it's important to wash them frequently, sometimes they don't get washed as often as they could be.
That's true. It actually hadn't been washed for a while either. So maybe it was just accumulation over time. So I won't totally blame Stuart.
Oh,
and
no.
It was my fault for just leaving it there. So.
Oh no. Well, lesson learned.
Lesson learned.
And do you have a mom must-have that you can share with us today, Lisa?
I do. Yes. I know we were talking about different chemicals, how they can disrupt the gut microflora and contribute to leaky gut. So one of my favorite washes that we used for Stuart, it is a body and shampoo wash, and it's Canadian and it's organic, is the Susha Baby. I may be saying the name wrong, Susha Baby, but you can get it unscented. It's rated really low. It's rated 1 in the green on the Environmental Working Group Skin Deep website. We'll post information and links to that, but that means it's like pretty much safe, no toxic ingredients. When something gets to a 10 or it gets into the red color, then that can be really harmful in terms of allergies, hormone disruption, reproductive challenges, if you will, to the body. So that one is a good one, the Susha baby. I looked up a generic, or it's not a generic, but a commonly used body wash for kids. And actually that one was rated 5. So that's getting high. So, you know, you may think it's safe because it's made specifically for babies, but check out EWG.org and you can see what chemicals are in there that could be causing certain problems.
Awesome tip, Lisa. That's fantastic.
Great.
Great. So, perimenopausal mamas, thanks for joining us on this episode today. Please feel free to leave us a review. Let us know your comments. Let us know, you know, if you have any questions or any topics that you'd like us to cover. And you can always find us on Instagram and Facebook.
Until next week. Bye.
Bye.